on Wednesday morning, I got up and I went online and I opened up the Washington Post, which I don't do often, but I opened up online and I started to read some of the headlines of the newspaper. The first one I came to was Washington Archbishop's actions in Pittsburgh scrutinized in sexual abuse investigation at the Catholic Church. And I read about this archbishop who's in D.C., but who was in the Pittsburgh area during the time when 300 reports came out of children who were abused. And I kept reading because I got tired of that story very quickly, and I read a story entitled White Supremacist Rally Cost D.C. at Least $2.6 Million Preliminary Estimate Shows. And I thought for a minute, I've already had anxiety about the fact that there was a white supremacist rally in 2018, and now $2.6 million have gone to make sure everybody was safe. And then I kept reading, and Susan kind of joked me about this one because this one bothered me, and I'm not even a diehard Nats fan. It said, Gio Gonzalez struggles again, and the Nationals are .500 team after 120 games. And I said, seriously, is there anything good in the news? And then I thought for a minute, and I said, oh no, I have to preach on peace this Sunday. Why in the world did I agree to preach on peace when this question came over and over again, when that's the material that I have to work with? Why did I choose to go, okay, I've got the answer? Well, let me be very clear with you this morning. I don't have the answer. I don't have all the answers. We're in a sermon series right now called Tell Me More, where we're dealing with the questions that you asked, the questions that you put forward. And as I have said every week in this series, I don't know all the answers. I'm going to do my very best, but I don't know all the answers. And I want to be very clear about that always. You can hear from God as easily as I can hear from God. God can speak to you. And I think there are some powerful things God wants to say to us in the midst of this. Today's question, how do we attain the peace of Christ? This was asked in several different ways. I am not surprised this question was asked. I would say that these are some of the most anxious times that I have experienced in my life, and I'm not just talking about the political arena. I think they're anxious because we don't know who is going to lose their life as a result of someone walking into a building right now. We don't know who is going to be the latest person who dies from some great illness. Right, we read the news and we hear these stories and it causes us to be more and more anxious. And friends, social media and the instant release of information does not help anxiety. Things come out and they come so quickly and they don't come when the final story has come. Do you realize that? They come as we have bits and pieces, as guessing happens. I was talking about this with some folks this week and they said they were taking Facebook and Twitter off of their phones, because they have instant access all day to the information. And then Susan reminded me of an article that was in the Times not too long ago. It was an article by a guy named Farhad Manju. And he talks about how he decided to give up instant news for a month. He was just going to read the newspaper the next morning. The only way he was going to get his news was in print. And he talked about how there was a shooting that happened. And instead of getting the play-by-play all day long about what happened and about people guessing what the motivations of the person was and what happened and how many people had lost their lives and how many people were sick, he didn't get the information until the next morning when he opened the newspaper, when most of the finalized information was out. He said as he did this over the course of a month, he noticed that his anxiety was going way down. As he stopped getting instantaneous news, instantaneous stories, and the guessing that was happening, his anxiety went down, and guess what? He had a lot more free time on his hands. A lot more free time. So he decided to turn this into a practice. He got rid of all of his social media. He started to look at the news as it came in through the newspaper on a daily basis. Friends, part of the challenge that social media brings us is it's not just that it's instantaneous news. It's that people share things and say things and don't worry about the consequences of sharing and saying them. We don't think about the stories that we're sharing as to whether or not they might be true. I cannot tell you how many stars have died that have not actually died on social media. Poor Betty White. I mean, the woman has died like 150 times, and she is still kicking, okay? But it's these stories that are shared and things that come up, and they cause anxiety. They cause us, because it's happening at lightning speed, to get into a place where finding peace, because there's no space of quiet or stillness, is almost impossible. And that's not to mention whatever current story is going on in our lives. I sit with people in coffee houses, sometimes in my office, and they talk to me about things in their life, and rarely does someone sit down in the very beginning of our conversation and say, "I am at complete peace. All is well with my soul. I have figured it all out. I don't need anything." I mean, you know how nice that would be every once in a while? But we are a culture filled with anxiety. When Jesus talks about peace in the scriptures, when the disciples talk about peace, when Paul talks about peace, we often write that off and we say, "Well, that's just a thing for Bible times." Now, I do want to give one disclaimer this morning. There is a thing called real anxiety. There's a thing that people are medically treated for because it's a real condition. It's a real problem that people wrestle with. And I'm not speaking about sort of writing off this medical diagnosis of anxiety this morning. I want to be clear about that. But I also want to be clear that I don't think most anxiety that we experience is that. I think much of the anxiety we experience is a result of our culture around us. And I'm not just talking about sort of the culture outside the home. Sometimes it's the culture inside the home. Sometimes it's the culture in our workplaces. But I actually believe that a lot of anxiety is controllable. But a lot of it also comes from the fact that we can't control the future. You know that? We say things like, "What's going to happen?" For example, in the United Methodist Church, what's going to happen to our church? Right? That's something that frankly brings me anxiety. I don't know what's going to happen to this big denomination. People say, "What's going to happen to my family? Someone's ill. There is a rift in a relationship. I don't know what the outcome's going to be. How do I have peace in the midst of that?" What's going to happen to our country? What's going to happen to our world? What's going to happen if I don't have enough 401k or retirement in my future? Those things cause anxiety, and we spend so much time focusing on the future that we forget to even be here right now. So much anxiety is about what may come that we forget what's going on right now. So, if all of these things I've said are even remotely true, then this is an important question for us to talk about this morning. How do I get to a place of peace? How do I find myself in a place where my anxiety doesn't control everything I do, where I'm not paralyzed by the situations that are happening? I want to talk a little bit about Paul this morning. Paul was a missionary. He was a guy that went and spread things about Jesus to all these people. And he had a lot that he could have been incredibly anxious over. It was a time when there was political upheaval. The community that he came from, the Jewish community, was being challenged and pushed. There was a new Messiah that had come through, this new guy, Jesus, who people didn't know, was he really the real deal or was he not the real deal? And if you believed he was really the real deal, you could have lost your life for it. And Paul is this guy who had just made a decision that Jesus was the real deal. So all of these anxieties are going on. And he writes a letter to the church, which is clearly in anxious times. These people in Philippi, called the Philippians. And he writes this letter to the church, and they are clearly anxious because he says a lot of things about anxiety to them. But I want to take you near the end of the letter this morning. This is what he says near the end of the letter. He says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. He was writing to a group of people who couldn't understand the possibility of peace. Perhaps he has a word for us this morning. Perhaps there's something in this. Now, what I didn't mention to you is that Paul is also writing to them from a pit as a prisoner, not knowing where his food will come from tomorrow and if he will live. That's the situation. So Paul might have a little reason to be anxious. Would you agree? He might be coming from a place where he goes, I get what you're dealing with. I think so often we read the Bible and we think, well, I mean, they had it all together. Life was easier for them. But Paul's coming from a place of incredible hardship. Now he says, don't worry. All right, he's going to go through some things here that you're going to hear and you're going to go, well, that's pithy. That's nice. Just say it, right? Don't worry. Be happy. He says, pray. Okay, pray. Do that if you're anxious. He says, pray. But then he says something really weird, I think. He says, give thanks. I almost missed this piece when I read it. Give thanks. Become a thankful person. Now that seems strange and it seems simple and it seems cavalier just to say, well, just give thanks and then you'll be more peaceful. Now I'm going to address that concept near the end of the sermon, but I do want to address something really important here. I think what Paul believes and what he's saying here is that we can actually reorient our anxiety. In what he's saying here, he's saying we can actually shift our mentality. We can shift not our situation necessarily. It's not just, oh, don't worry, all will be well. Things may not be well, but we can shift the way we see and experience things. We can shift the way that we respond to things. We can reorient things. Well, the truth is, Paul might have actually been way ahead of his time because there's science that shows this is real. There's a guy named Richard Davidson. He's a neuroscientist, and he's a professor of psychology and psychiatry, which means he really knows what he's talking about. And he's been doing these studies, and he's been doing them for years on this idea of anxiety and getting rid of anxiety and going on towards happiness and joy and not letting anxiety control you. And he's been studying the brain. And where he went first to study was he went to study monks. Because monks spent a lot of their lives meditating. They were often closed off from some of the things that came out in the rest of the world, and they controlled a lot of their mindset by meditating. And he started looking at these things called functional MRIs, which I had heard of before. And it's when you study parts of the brain and you look for how it lights up and how it activates when different things happen. So he's looking at functional MRIs, and it's a study where he mapped the brains of employees that were different people that were monks and employees that were at a biotech company. And he got the monks to train the employees of the biotech company to meditate. And these people meditated simply 3 hours once a week. 9 hours of meditation these employees meditated. Those who meditated noticed a difference in their mood and a decrease in anxiety, while their immune systems became increasingly stronger. Now that's all interesting, right? But here's the part that made headlines. When they looked at the brain, meditation produced a significant increase in activity in the parts of the brain that were responsible for positive emotions. It's not just feel good. Meditation absolutely transformed the way the brain functions, the way people think. The left prefrontal cortex is where that happens. When they studied these meditating monks who meditated and gave thanks, this area of the brain lit up like the lights in Times Square because they spent time meditating. Now, when Paul says pray, I actually think that's what he's talking about. To sit and to be still, to meditate, to not worry so much about what we're going to say, to not try to get all the answers. One of the things that I talk about and that others talk about in this tradition is this idea of centering prayer, which does relatively the same thing. See, often in prayer, I think what we try to do is we try to find ourselves in a place where we know all the right things to say. Centering prayer is about shutting up and just listening. And it's about finding that space over and over again not to say anything, to start in a place of silence, to pick a word or an image that we put in our minds that bring us back every time our minds wander, because it's going to happen. Can you imagine being a monk and meditating for like 6 hours a day? I hear, ugh. And then they love it, right? They love it because it's like lighting the brain all up, right? Centering prayer does the same thing. It takes a long time to get to that point, friends. Monks study how to do this. We're actually going to offer a life group this year, a course on centering prayer. Pauline Daniels, who worships with us here, is going to lead that on Monday evenings. And I want to encourage you, if you're a person that needs a little bit more peace in your life, to think about signing up for that. To get yourself to a place where you're centered. My word is abundance that I use, and my mind wanders a lot. To bring it back, I use that word, and it is so life-giving for me. So I want to encourage you to think about what Paul says, to pray, to be still. But I think he actually hits on something in this giving thanks that might be a little bit more practical and easy for us to do right away. This is what he says. He says, for us to achieve peace, we must create peace. To be peace achievers, we must be peace creators. Think about that. How much of your life do you spend out there actually trying to create peace? Or do you just try to stay away from the drama? Well, Paul says, after this section that I just read, listen what he says. He says, finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. Create your own peace. Create peace for other people. Y'all, when we have these anxious thoughts come, and they're going to come, when situations come up, Paul says, think about a peaceful possibility and create it. Drive some of the future, even if it's unknown. Don't simply wait for the anxiety to take over. It sounds a little fluffy, right? Just create peace. Well, it worked for Paul. It worked for the church that he wrote to. And I believe it will actually work for us. If we focus on and we share whatever is noble, whatever is honorable, let's say we do keep Facebook and Twitter on our phones. Let's say we need to do that for some of us, maybe. Got to wean ourselves off. But let's say we actually do that. What if we vowed for 1 month to only share positive things? What if we vowed for a month to not only share positive things, but when we see something negative that someone shares, to send them a message and just say, hey, I love you. Not to battle, not in person, because part of the thing that we're going into in this next sermon series is the thing that social media does is it lets us battle without there being an actual person on the other side. And we battle and we fight with each other and we fuss with each other, and it's all good because I don't have to look in your face. And I don't have to see that what I'm saying is hurting you. And I don't have to sense the emotion that you're having, because it's really easy for me just to throw things out into the web world. But the problem is when I'm constantly receiving it and I'm not putting out anything positive, I'm not focusing on whatever is noble and just and good and commendable, which is what Paul says in the midst of his situation. And he says, if we do these things, the God of peace will be with you. And that's Paul's way of saying, it's not your whole deal to control. God will be with you through the midst of whatever the situation is. And Paul doesn't just say God, Paul says the God of peace. The God who will bring peace. Look, you want peace? Be a person of peace. Be a person that shares peace, not one that shares anxiety. I think the more we try and bring peace to others, the more we'll bring peace to ourselves. These are anxious times. We are anxious people. We live in Northern Virginia, and that brings its own level of anxiety. But Jesus can bring us peace. We can't figure it all out on our own. I can't program it all. Paul was in the midst of a really challenging situation, and in the midst of it, he says, rejoice. He was sharing that positivity with others from the very beginning. Rejoice. Again, I say rejoice. I know my situation's hard, but here's what you know. I love you, and you can rejoice because the God of peace will be with you. So tomorrow, when I go to read the paper, when I'm in Florida, because I'm going to Florida this afternoon, that's going to bring its own level of peace. But tomorrow when I go to read the paper, I'm going to actually look for the stories of peace. I'm going to see if I can find them. And I'm going to read those stories first. Because I think if we're people who seek peace, we'll get it. I bet they're in there. And I pray that the God of peace will be with you.